Ukraine takes Russia to court over the war in eastern Ukraine, and a blockade of the Donbass ups the stakes in that war. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFERL, and joining me in the studio is RFERL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, so Ukraine's filed suit against Russia in the International Court of Justice at The Hague, accusing Moscow of violating UN anti-terrorism and anti-discrimination conventions with their support of pro-Moscow separatists. A hearing today will be largely procedural, and the case could drag on for years. These things tend to do so. Steve, Georgia filed a similar suit against Russia back in 2011, but was unsuccessful. Is there any reason to think this will be any different with Ukraine?
It's hard to say. I mean, apparently, whereas Georgia only cited anti-discrimination conventions, Ukraine is saying that Russia also has violated anti-terrorism, UN anti-terrorism conventions. So that's a difference. You know, I think the idea of the UN court accusing or finding Russia culpable of terrorism would obviously be a very kind of explosive thing. I mean, it's something that Russia would be extremely upset about, since
to say the least.
Accuses the West of double standards on terrorism. But it is a difference from the Georgia case. I mean, I think, you know, one thing about this is that it's an attempt, and it's a way to kind of increase and keep up the international pressure on Russia over its and try to not let anyone, you know, forget that Russia has interfered in eastern Ukraine, and it's also about Crimea. So, you know, that's going to, I think it's an attempt to keep the pressure on.
Yeah, and they're also bringing in to support the anti-terrorism claim, the shooting down of MH17 is which would give this case a little bit more merit. But it could take years. But you're right; it's going to keep this in the news. It's going to keep the international attention and pressure going. On a related topic, Ukrainian nationalists are continuing their blockade of separatist-held areas in the Donbass. Their stated aim is to prevent coal, which they say is helping finance the war in the east, from being shipped to the rest of Ukraine. I've always found this pretty remarkable that Renat Akhmetov's coal mines in the Donbass are continuing to sell coal to Ukraine, and then it's been able to go through unhindered. Authorities in Kyiv are opposed to the blockade, and separatist authorities have responded by seizing some of the business of Ukrainian oligarchs, including Akhmetov. This seems to me to be just the latest sign that the status quo in Ukraine is unsustainable, that Minsk is dead in the water, and that we're moving into an entirely new phase here in this conflict. We're moving into this post-Minsk world. This conflict has been regulated a certain way for a while now, and I think we're about to move into something else. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think, I mean, post-Minsk, I'm not sure. I mean, in some practical ways, it's post-Minsk, but I think the West is going to continue to, you know, to be interested in and to say that Minsk is the way to solve it. Mm-hmm. To some degree, it may, that the sort of fate of that or the future of that may depend on what the U.S., how the U.S. policy shapes up. But definitely, as you're saying, this blockade kind of changes and the reactions to the blockade change the scenery or change the situation on the ground. I mean, you mentioned it's remarkable that coal had been going, you know, from the separatist-held territories into the rest of Ukraine. And that's sort of a sign, you know, that's sort of like, it's a practical thing. The war is going on, but, you know, here's this commerce continuing. So this clearly does change that, and it's part of kind of a series of events that are linked, or actions that are hardening kind of the border, I guess, mm-hmm. between the separatist-held territories and the rest of Ukraine. And other elements of that, obviously, are Russia's recognition of the documents issued by separatist authorities there. So, you know, it's – the big question is what is this moving to? Is it moving toward, you know, Russia annexing, you mm-hmm. know, attempting to annex or recognizing the independence of these areas, of the separatist-held areas, like it did with Abkhazia and South Ossetia, or is it, or you know, a renewed outbreak of sort of full-scale war? So it's hard to say, though.
Yeah, no, it is hard to say. And it's interesting that with the oligarchs here, because really, like, Akhmetov has been in a pretty comfortable spot here. His businesses are operating as normally in Luhansk. He's making money off of this. And the argument of the nationalists running the blockade is that this is financing the separatists, which in fact it is helping finance the separatists. Russia's also helping finance the separatists. You mentioned the document, which is also the so-called Luhansk People's Republic using the ruble as their currency. I think that the separation of the separatist-held areas from Ukraine is becoming harder.
Right.
It's becoming firmer. And I actually do want to do a piece this week on this about there's going to be a very big tell in what Russia does next, because if they are headed towards a conflict with the West, or that they think they can just get away with it, then that the annexation or recognition would be a clear sign of that they're really not afraid of whatever is going to come from the West, if anything, at this point. As well as escalating the war, a continuation of the status quo would maybe mean they're still holding out hope for a grand bargain or something.
Right.
But this is what I'm watching for, that tell, because the status quo cannot last here. I just don't see how it lasts.
No, and you wonder, I mean, as you're saying, is it kind of, okay, if Ukraine is now not getting the coal, this also in real ways pushes the separatist-held regions sort of closer to Russia. It makes them rely more on Russia, giving Russia even more leverage with them than it had, perhaps.
Although it's also going to cost Russia more money than it had.
Exactly. So one of the questions about what Russia is going to do is, well, is Russia ready to shoulder this financial burden?
Right.
And that's always been a question with Eastern Ukraine, but you know, it may be changing. And again, another thing I think is a factor and may, you know, be a factor in Russia's decision on what to do and what it's going to do is, you know, is the U.S. policy going forward.
Yeah, and we don't really know what that is. And the other thing to consider is Kyiv, because, I mean, the government in Kyiv is against this officially, and I believe in reality. But there have been voices out there that have been arguing that the best thing that would happen to Ukraine is just to cut these separatist territories off. This is a very emotional, very heated debate in Kyiv. Some very prominent scholars, most notably Alexander Motil at Rutgers University, Newark, have argued that this would be the best thing that could possibly happen to Ukraine. And it would be the last thing Russia wants, frankly. Now, you have to wonder how Kyiv is going to play this situation. They're never going to state publicly that this is what they want.
But, right. I mean, you had, you know, you saw the sort of backlash when Savchenko suggested or said that, you know, that Kyiv would have to sort of forget about Crimea for a while.
Right.
You know, you'd have the same thing, obviously, from Ukrainian nationalists and others in Ukraine, if there was any indication or, you know, suggestion that Kyiv is kind of ready to give up the separatist territory.
No government is going to admit wanting to give up territory. Although this war, I've always thought of it, and it's this very weird thing. The country that gets stuck with these territories is the one that lost in a lot of ways. It's a strange situation because Russia wants them back into Ukraine as a fifth column. Ukraine's aware of that. They're not letting them come back into Russia as a fifth column. The status quo has continued like this for years, but now we're getting this hardening of the separation, and it's we're really going into uncharted territory now. And on that note, we'll wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast. Joining me in the studio has been RFARL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week, and now I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.